geographic level that I will be analyzing or rather presenting. What I'm really trying to do through this film, one of the things that I've tried to do through the film was to foreground the use that we make of archaeological sites and of dance performance in our project of reimagining history and reimagining the past. So the film was made sort of as a kind of educational film, so it's not the kind of film that is presented at film festivals, just to sort of clarify. It's just a 37 minutes documentary, and then on the DVD you have separately two different dances that are part of the repertoire that I've been sort of considering, that are presented without any kind of commentary. And the film follows very much a very tried and tested model, that of an expository documentary. In other words, you do have a voiceover, and you do have a narrative that sort of is given throughout, and sort of helps you to situate Odyssey historically. And then it moves on to considering these a number of dances, and in particular the one that I will be discussing, the Shakti Rupa Yogini. This is one of the recognized classical dances of contemporary India. It's said to have originated from the ritualistic and age-old dance and singing practices of the Maharis, or temple dancers, that were attached to the temple of Lord Jagannath at Puri until as late as the early 1960s. However, the history of Odissi is more complex than this. The dance, as we know it, really evolved from the 1940s theatre performances in the city of Cuttack in Orissa, and also it incorporated different performance streams. Turning Odissi into a classical dance form was not a unique phenomenon. It was part of a broader process of classicization and concomitant modernization of Indian dance, of which Odissi was only a chapter. And in this whole process of classicization, Odissi followed very much the blueprint that was provided by Bharatanatyam. So it is a dance that is performed on the modern stage, the temple stage that Dr. Avanti Miduri has discussed in connection with Bharatanatyam. That model was also taken over by Odissi. Odissi, in other words, has never been performed in temples, and I really want to make this point very, very clear. There are different forms of Odissi, some of which are regarded as transgressive, by which I mean transgressive of its reconstituted canon, because there is a reconstituted canon for Odissi dance today. And to a great extent, these forms are seen as antagonistic to the very principles of classicism that are invoked for Odissi as a form, such as the softness and femininity of the dance. And one of such transgressive forms is the Odissi that was reimagined by Guru Surendranath Jena. I was intrigued by the way he had reimagined Odissi out of his engagement with two temple sites, which seemed to have sustained the whole of his choreographic output. One is the Sun Temple at Konarak, a temple complex which, as you know, is today an archaeological park. And the other one is the 64 Yogini Temple at Hirapur. I just would like to say at this point that Guru Surendranath Jena died less than 3 weeks ago. And I suddenly become very conscious of the fact that my film has sort of footage of him performing Abhinaya. And there is very little documentation of his work. So, you know, I'm really glad that I managed to work with him just before sort of he left us. So the relationship with Konarak helps to situate Guru Jena's dance making within the contemporary Indian classical dance discourse. But the Hirapur connection has a peculiarity of its own, and it is the performance filmed at Hirapur that I interpret as being significant, very significant. I asked Guru Jena's eldest daughter, Pratibha Jena, to to perform there the dance piece inspired by the site, which is entitled Shakti Rupa Yogini, the Shakti form of the yoginis. To witness that performance was an extraordinary experience, which really opens up a new understanding of the relationship between dance and the temples, going beyond stereotypical notions of sculptural poses that are being replicated in the dance, and also looking at the role that the temple still has in the creative endeavor of a number of dance masters. You can call them masters, gurus, choreographers, but certainly that reference point is still quite important. So what I wanted to do by taking Pratibhajena to Hirapur was to make it, to make explicitly visual the relationship that that piece of choreography has with the Shakti, with the yoginis of the Hirapur temple. So I am going to show you an excerpt from that film, and so you will hear an introduction sort of about the Hirapur site. Now again, bear in mind that this is a film for educational purposes, not a paper, and the purpose is not really to discuss Hirapur in detail, but Hirapur is part of the context. So, you know, there may be things, I mean, all that information was collated through sort of writings that there are today about Hirapur, conversations with archaeologists, etc. You may possibly disagree with one or two of the interpretations that are presented here, but, you know, I just wanted to point out that I felt it was necessary to provide that context. And where is it? No. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that might help. I'm going to put it on full screen. Wait.
First of the five signature works presented here is Shakti Rupa Yogini, performed at the Hirapur Temple Nirbhubaneswar by Pratibhajena. The Hirapur Temple is a hypatheral, or all-round construction, dating back to the period between 7th and 9th centuries, the exact date is unknown, and believed to have been built over an earlier temple. It is one of only three extant Indian temples dedicated to the 64 yoginis. These are powerful tantric goddesses, also known as Dakinis in Tantric Buddhism. Tantrism developed as a Hindu and a Buddhist practice all over India and swept Orissa from the 7th to 10th century CE. It merged with indigenous non-Hindu beliefs in magic and witchcraft. It denotes an esoteric religious system whose teachings were handed down directly from teacher to student after an initiation ceremony. The word Tantrism comes from the word used to denote the teaching itself, which was named Tantra. The Tantrics sought siddhi, or superhuman powers, which could be acquired through secret practices. However, the attainment of siddhi was always regarded as incidental to, rather than being a substitute for, the attainment of moksha, the final liberation of the self, which Buddhists called enlightenment. The Yogini cult focused on the worship of the female life force, or Shakti, and was sustained by a belief in magic, often drawing on indigenous non-Hindu tribal practices. The name Hirapur, incidentally, means Diamond City, another reference to Tantrism, as the Buddhist Tantric way, or Vajrayana, is also known as the Way of the Diamond. One can see almost everywhere in Orissa the Shakti Pithas, a type of platform for ritual offerings to the Shakti, or female divine energy. They are found on the trees or at roadsides and are equivalent to temples. One of the most important Shakti Pithas is at Hirapur, adjacent to the temple. The Yogini cult survived for several centuries and blended with Vaishnavism, a Hindu sectarian cult centered around the god Vishnu and his incarnations. In the 15th century, an Oriya poet of humble origin by the name of Sarala Das wrote the Chandi Purana, a work which vividly describes the 64 yoginis who emanate from the body of the goddess Devi Narayani, who can be further identified with the goddess Durga. The cult of Devi Narayani is Vaishnava, but is underpinned by Tantrism. The presiding deity of Hirapur is actually Mahamaya, whose name means great illusion, and the 64 yoginis are her attendants. But over time, there has been a conflation of Mahamaya and Devi Narayani, And in Hirapur today, the villagers worship Devi Narayani rather than Mahamaya, and the yoginis are seen as her emanations. The yoginis have individual names and identities. They are goddesses in their own right and consorts of gods. The art historian Vidya Deheja has described in her book, Yogini Cults and Temples, a Tantra Tradition, the ancient yogini cult as follows.
Devotees who performed this worship were known to conduct the Shada Chedan ceremony, meaning the beheading of a dead body as the ultimate symbol of detachment from earthly desires. The members of this cult never harmed living beings and never conducted animal or human sacrifice. Until 1500 AD, there are references in history to the widespread following of this cult. In the eastern provinces, there are reports that yogini worshippers would ask for corpses from poor families with the promise of a grand funeral and provide this after the shava, the corpse ritual, was over. But in later centuries, out of the scary nature of the ritual, and because of the growing stronghold of the bhakti or devotional movement all over India, which preached love of God as the finest path to self-realization, this cult died a slow death and remained only in small pockets of India. Thus today, several yogini temples are dilapidated and neglected, with even tourists scared to enter them. Several of them were not even known to archaeologists until 1953.
The temple at Hirapur is the smallest of the extant Indian yogini temples. It is an enclosure of sandstone blocks and a foundation of laterites. There are 9 exterior niches, each one home to a yogini sculpted in sandstone, poised above large severed human heads. Each holds either her characteristic curved mitral spear in one hand and her skull cup in the other. There is a projecting entranceway, a feature not found in the other yogini temples, guarded by a pair of skeletal doorkeepers. Each one wears a skull garland and snake anklets. One holds a severed human head. On the pedestal, there are 2 other skeletal figures holding skull cups, each with a dog or jackal. The short, narrow entrance is on the east and requires the worshipper to crouch over to enter the sacred space, which has no upper limit. The interior wall is about 2 meters high and contains 64 niches, each with a plaque over it that identifies the female figure within. Today, only 60 figures remain. The Chalsati, or 64 yoginis, are carved from a fine black chlorite. Each rupa, or form, is about 75 centimeters. Each one represents a voluptuous woman wearing a cloth held around her hips by an ornate girdle. Besides the belt, she wears the other 7 symbolic ornaments: bracelets, armlets, anklets, earrings, necklace, garland, and headdress. The hairstyles are elaborate and include a bun worn to one side or else a coronet of tight curls. Some are warriors or huntresses with bows and arrows. Others balance on a pair of wheels or play a drum. Most have 2 arms, but a few have 4. The Vahana, or mount of the yogini, includes animals such as the fish, parrot, turtle, frog, snake, scorpion, and rat. Some yoginis appear with a decapitated male head, an archer, or other such representation of their feet. Several of the yoginis have animal faces. At the centre of the enclosure, there was a platform, a mandapa, with 4 pillars. Each of those pillars had a niche with a figure in it that represented the chief Indian male deities, that is, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, and Indra, but as females. This mandapa has now been restored to include 8 niches. 4 niches enshrine a phallic male figure, and 4 enshrine replicas of the female figures which are missing from the interior walls of the temple. This is a contemporary reconstruction attempting to marry ancient beliefs with more contemporary Hindu orthodoxy. Inspired by the Chandi Purana of Sarala Das, Guru Surendranath Jena, a devotee of the yoginis, created the dance Shakti Rupa Yogini, depicting the powerful, energetic, and ferocious forms of the goddess. A vigorous and strenuous choreography, it invokes the goddess herself as the auspicious one, or Mangala. The dance combines Guru Surendranath's research into textual sources referring to the yogini cult, with his imaginative visualization of ritual practices of the villagers and his personal devotion to the goddess. Set in Rag Malika and Ek and Jati Tali, the composition is very demanding to perform and requires great commitment on the part of the dancer. It is here danced by Pratibha Jena on the Shakti Pitha of the temple. It is a most unusual composition in that it is inextricably linked with Hirapur, the choreography feat of the site. The performance of Shakti Rupa Yogini in Hirapur brings out Guru Jena's vision and extraordinary sense of connection with the temple site, with which he has infused his choreography. The sensorium of village and temple life is conveyed through the dance. Through it, the past is mobilized and an older way of worshipping is recontextualized in the 21st century, finding a renewed spirituality in the fragmented ritualistic function of the archaeological site. The dancer, Pratibha Jena, on her encounter with the site, seemed to enter a heightened psychic state, resulting in tears streaming down her cheeks as she contemplated the goddess, seized by overwhelming emotion. This kind of ecstasy comes out of the experience of darshana, the act of seeing and being seen by the goddess. The whole performance was preceded by a puja performed by the local priest. Though officially not in worship, this archaeological survey of India site continues to serve the religious needs of the local community. Darshana is a transformative experience, as scholars have explained. Devotees perceive the image as a sentient being, not as lifeless statue, and through darshana, they establish a mutuality with the image. Through the choreography of this particular dance, the site is animated, the imagery of the powerful yoginis are given life, and the defunct practices of worship of their ancient cult are reactivated. The performance of Shakti Rupa Yogini at Hirapur constitutes a way for the performer and the spectators of interacting with the surroundings and of retrieving, reimagining, and representing the archaeological site, dancing the past into the present and elaborating its poetics.
Okay, just would like to show you 2 or 3 minutes of the dance with the music, without the commentary. I still have some time. Oops, let me forward this. Fast forwarding so that we don't get this. I'll just take it from here.
Namo Nara.
Forward it a bit so that you get a sense of how it develops, and I'll try and match it with what you saw while the voiceover was going on. Okay, I'll
Thank you.
Okay. Gives you an idea more or less of the composition. There's more. It's a 20-minute piece. Just would like to finish by saying what we see in the film shows how through the choreography the site is animated, breathing life into the imagery of the powerful yoginis and reactivating the defunct practices of worship of the ancient cult. The dance performance which took place at Hilpur was not an established ritual, nor a locally recognized performative tradition. It was informed by the syncretic vision of the choreographer, Guru Surendranath Jena. It resonated, nevertheless, with the local villagers. What comes out of this film is the idea that choreographed movement seems to be vital to imagine the mobile forces that were at work at archaeological sites such as Hilpur, rendered still and turned into an artifact in the present. Such sites, as I said in the film, are not officially in worship. Taking dance to Hilpur has showed that opening sites up for performance might be yet a further way to contextualize humanity. Far from suggesting reenactments, I am envisaging the use of choreography and performance as an interpretive tool conducive to an intellectual, aesthetic, and emotional engagement with the archaeological site. The project of reimagining from the perspective of today enriches our lives by suggesting alternative ways of conceptualizing the place of art and life activity in society and the relationship between them, avoiding the projection of the past as an immobile moment. Thank you.
We've got a few minutes for questions. Yes?
I think that was fascinating, and I think you raise a very important point, which is, a lot of these archaeological sites, when they were rediscovered, we see them through colonial eyes, through the way the colonial archaeologists saw them. What you brought to us was the way in which somebody in Orissa saw it through the poetry, through the myths, and through what was known. Now, my specific question to you is, since you worked on this, is that part of this was Oriya.
Yes.
And now, can you tell us something more about why he chose these sites? Because it's quite unusual.
Well, as I said, this whole thing is really... this whole documentary is about the creative endeavor of Guru Surendranath Jena.
Yes.
And he was inspired by this site. He was in love with the yoginis. He was fascinated by the yoginis and the poem, the text that he utilized for the choreography. That also sort of reconnects with that past. So what he did, he was trying to reimagine the cult of the yoginis. And he use different elements, different stories, different things that he sort of drew from several sources. Some of them, some village practices, because there are different moments in the choreography, village practices that he witnessed in his youth. Some of them just, simply stories that he knew about the, for example, the beheading of the corpse, which is shown as part of the worship. You have the five elements, you have these sort of the five M's that are sort of being shown through the choreography when she does the drinking, that's all part of the worship of the yoginis. The whole thing was simply because I knew that Hilpur was... and also the other thing that was of interest to me was the fact that Hilpur, even though it's an archaeological site, the villagers just go and worship. And the actual pujari is an employee of the Archaeological Survey of India. He is the warden. So the whole thing happened. And, of course, this resonates partly with what Indra Sengupta was saying yesterday about colonial archaeology and what, in fact, archaeology and if it is today in sort of as part of the you know, the nation, you know, India as a nation, the kind of practices that continue in the name of that archaeology, and the total effort that there is to totally separate the sacred and the secular, when in fact, you know, despite everything, it does come back because it's really felt as being part of life, everyday life. So, and as I said, normally this dance is never performed at Hirapur, but because of all the connection with the site, I thought, let's go back to the site and let's look at it, and then let's look at the dance at the site. And then everything else just happened, you know, when we were doing the filming, the fact that there was the puja, it was early morning, so the priest came and he said, oh, you want to perform a dance here, okay, let's do a puja, etc., etc. So,
Jaina want to dance in the temple, or was this your decision to take his choreography?
Yeah, I spoke with him. I mean, I would have never done anything without his consent. I obviously agreed that with him. He was still alive.
He wanted to do it.
When I said, it would be nice to show the temple, and then he said, initially I didn't even want to go to Hirapur, to tell you the truth. I thought that the most important thing was, because most of the documentary is about the Odissi technique that he recreated, and I wanted to go to Konarak, because that was essential in terms of how the technique was recreated. But Hirapur, you know, I knew that it was there, but we were there, and he said, let's go to Hirapur. You know, let's go to Hirapur. That would be good, because that is the piece, you know, that I composed because of the yoginis, etc. So, it's also as a homage to him, in a sense, you know, he wanted to do it. So, I thought, well, we're not very far, Konark and Hirapur, relatively close to each other. So, we just went to Bhubaneswar and went to Hirapur.
Just a comment.
Won't you say that this is totally different from what Kelu Babu and Dem Das, they were doing. So this is totally different thing that he was presenting, what was going on from the 50s.
Yeah.
New development, something new.
Yeah, I mean, his Odissi technique that I'm using words that perhaps shouldn't be used to describe Indian dance, but the way he reimagined Odissi is quite different from what Kelu Babu was doing. For example, you know, he loved showing Bhadrakali and the moments, you know, of a sort of horror. You know, that would not be, in fact, Guru Jaina for a long time was not even acknowledged as a master of Odissi, and everybody would say, oh no, he's just a weirdo. You know, that's not Odissi. What he does is not Odissi. It was only this year, at the beginning of 2007, that he was finally given, I think it was the Padma Shri, he was finally recognized. And then, you know, but he was already quite ill. And as I said, he passed away 3 weeks ago. He died of a cardiac arrest. He suffered from pneumonia. And so that was really quite sad. For me, it was extremely sad because, of course, I became very close to the family and to him. One of the good things of this documentary is that at some point, while we were at Konarak, Surababu decided that he wanted to show us a piece of Abhinaya, so he just started singing there, and we had the camera, so we immediately focused on him. So we have footage of Surababu performing one of his Abhinaya pieces, sort of singing and performing that for us. So maybe some other time I can show you that, or maybe you can get hold of the DVD.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll just quickly eject this, and Devesh can come and use it.